Our reading this morning comes from the Gospel according to Mark, chapter 1, and from verse 40. A leper came to him, begging him. And kneeling, he said to him, "If you choose, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him, and said to him, "I do choose, be made clean." Immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. After sternly warning him, he sent him away at once, saying to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest, and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them." But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and to spread the word, so that Jesus could no longer go into a town openly, but stayed out in the country, and people came to him from every quarter. Amen. In the last while, we've been considering a number of things like peace and freedom and being participants in the kingdom or the realm of God. We have considered grace and we've thought about forgiveness, looking at the parable of the unmerciful servant. And this morning, we are going to consider something that I believe isn't always easy to describe. But it's actually an integral part of our lives and our faith. Or at the very least, it is meant to be if we profess to have faith. And so this morning, I want to talk about joy. As soon as I said joy, people started smiling. Joy can be quite elusive, as I discovered when I typed the word into my tablet looking for the dictionary definition. I wanted to be precise. I'm not that thick that I'm not too sure what joy is. I found Joy the movie, Joy a clothing firm, I found Joy the nightclub, and I found Joy a singer. Everything but the definition for the word joy. And when eventually I found it, it read as follows: joy, a feeling of great pleasure and happiness. And as much as I agree that joy might include both pleasure and happiness, I have to say I didn't find it very satisfying, especially in terms of what we might call Christian joy. And by this I don't mean that Christians have cornered the market on joy. For many people, if you were to ask them to describe joy, they would probably tell you about happiness or a happy occasion, perhaps something that for a fleeting period of time filled them with a sense of joy. But is that all that joy is? Darts of fleeting happiness that strike us at certain times. Also, is joy only wrapped up in external influences? In other words, do we have to wait for outside forces before we can experience joy? Put more simply, do people, for example, have to do things for us, like express kindness or give us gifts, before we can experience joy? Or does joy go deeper than such things? And if it does go deeper, then what else is involved? And I think one of the biggest misconceptions about our faith is the belief held by some folk that we should always be happy. That no matter what life throws at us, we should be able to brush it off and just be happy. And often when people aren't happy, in some Christian circles at least, they might be accused of having little or no faith. And this, friends, is of course a load of nonsense. We cannot go through life pretending to be things that we're not. We cannot go through life denying that some of the challenges we face are extremely difficult to deal with, no matter how much faith we might have. And in those moments, in those times, we do not feel joy. I don't think there's anyone on earth who is happy all the time, because life just doesn't work like that. I also think that one of the reasons why people sometimes get disillusioned with faith or with religion is because these things haven't delivered what they've expected. In my time as a Christian and a minister, I've come across people who have felt like this, who have rather simplistically believed that if they try out religion or dip their toe into the water of religion, that everything in their lives will magically turn around. And happiness will descend from heaven, and everything will be all right. But it doesn't work like that. Faith is not like going to a supermarket and purchasing happiness, or like winning the lottery. It brings about transformation, yes, but not in a magical way. Joy, I would contend, goes much deeper than simply feeling happy, and joy isn't something that magically falls out of the sky. Knowing joy requires something from us, not just God dishing out all the fruits. Joy has much to do with having open eyes and open ears, being aware and giving thanks. And because of this, it is something that can be experienced even in our darkest places. Think of the apostles Peter and John in the book of Acts, rejoicing despite the fact that they'd just been scourged. Think about the apostle Paul, who suffered all kinds of disasters, from shipwrecks to flogging to being stoned, yet rejoiced in the midst of all these afflictions. And we could say, well, they were mad. That obviously there was something wrong with them. But were they? I've read numerous accounts of people in dark places, such as the apostles found themselves in. And yet, even in a small way, they were able to rejoice. They were able to know and experience joy. So we ask the question, what then is joy? I personally would describe joy in Christian terms as an understanding that nothing in this world or beyond this world can ever separate us from God. It is knowing that no matter what, God will never leave us nor forsake us. If one looks at the parables that Jesus told that include rejoicing, what one cannot fail to notice is the fact that that rejoicing was always the result of a person knowing that something or someone wasn't lost. In Luke chapter 15, there are three parables like this. The parable of the lost sheep, the parable of the lost coin, and the parable of the what? The lost son. And in all three, the rejoicing is great. The shepherd found his one lost sheep, the woman found her lost coin, and the father found his lost son, or perhaps the son found his father. Knowing that someone or something wasn't lost brought on great rejoicing, a sense of joy that burst forth from the people involved, to the point that they wanted to share their joy with their friends and with those they loved. They all discovered that what they thought might have been lost forever wasn't actually lost, even though they had to seek it out. On the night I committed my life to Jesus, to follow his way, I experienced such joy. It was like nothing I had ever experienced before, and is very difficult to describe. But what I believe made me feel like I did, what enabled me to experience such a deep sense of joy, was knowing that my life was in God's hands. That God accepted me and God loved me. And that nothing would ever separate me from God's love. And on the morning after, as I've told you before, I wanted to share what had happened to me, what had taken place in my life. And the recipient of my joy and rejoicing was my brother Stephen, who graciously listened to me babbling away as we drove to the beach to go surfing. And then when we arrived, he gave me a hug. I think it was the first time ever between us. And that wanting to tell, as you may have gathered, has never left me. Knowing that whatever I venture into or through in my life, God in Christ is with me. God never goes away, that this is my source of joy. And there's a wonderful story in the Gospel of Mark that we've read this morning in chapter 1 and verse 40. We're told that a leper came to Jesus and kneeling down, he said to Jesus, "If you choose, you can make me clean." And moved with pity, or I prefer the word compassion, we are told Jesus stretched out his hand, touched the man and said, "I do choose, be made clean." The man was healed of his affliction, of his leprosy or some disease like that. And Jesus said to him, "See that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them." And what did the man do? He went out and he spread the word to all and sundry to such an extent that Jesus was no longer able to go into the village or the town, but had to stay out in the country and people came to him. Now we can say that the man was dreadfully disobedient. He should have listened to Jesus. But I can understand completely why he couldn't keep his mouth shut, because the same thing happened to me. Christian singer Don Francisco. Anyone heard of him? He sings a song about the healing of Jairus' daughter, the one that everyone bar Jesus had thought was dead. And the chorus of the song is, "I've got to tell somebody. I've got to tell somebody. I've got to tell somebody what Jesus did for me." Friends, it's joy that makes us feel like that. It's knowing the presence of God that brings us joy. But there's more. There's a practice that we can partake in that develops, feeds, and broadens a sense of joy. And that practice is thanksgiving or gratefulness. I found that the most joyless people I have come across in life are those who have nothing good to say about anything, who live thankless lives because they're often so self-absorbed that they are blind to anything that might be a cause for thanksgiving or a cause for joy. And people sometimes say, "Well, how can you expect people to know joy if they're poor or have nothing?" And what you might notice if you look at 99% of the people Jesus encountered, that they were in the same boat. They were the poor, they were the marginalized, they were society's outcasts. And Jesus let them know that their worth and their value and their joy wasn't about what they did or didn't have in a material sense. Leandra, when she began her career in Cape Town a fairly long time ago, once encountered an elderly gentleman she had to see for some reason. And she told me when she recalled the story that the man had next to nothing in terms of worldly possessions. Yet he exuded a sense of well-being and peace and joy that she had hardly ever encountered before. And so she asked him what gave him his joy. And he whispered in her ear, "My dear, I may have nothing, but I know the Lord. I know the Lord." He knew the Lord, and there's a vast difference between believing in the Lord and knowing the Lord. And part of that knowing is thanksgiving and gratefulness, to always have our eyes open to to the presence of God. In Switzerland, I was co-leader of a youth group. I used to call them my refugees because they came from all over the place. And we used to meet on a Friday night, and one night I took them out on an exercise into the city of Basel. Their task was to identify the fingerprints of God. And at first, they looked at me as if I had just arrived from another planet. And so I challenged them to think deeper and look further than what was simply staring them in the face. And then they went out on this little journey of discovery. What did you find? I asked them when they came back. We found the Kantonsspital, or the hospital, one group reported. We found a university faculty, said another. We found a school. We found a senior citizens' home. We found a music shop. We found a museum. We found a church. We realized that we just had to notice the sky and the trees and the river, that God is all around us in nature. Everywhere we realized we could see the fingerprints of God, and everywhere we looked, there were reasons for giving thanks and being grateful. And all we had to do in order to see through different eyes was to stop and think and prepare our hearts. To look beyond the bricks and the mortar. To understand why these things were there. And the result was a deep sense of joy that God's presence was there, even in the things that we so often take for granted or don't even take time to notice. Take time to notice the small things. Take time to give thanks to God for them. Take time to express your gratefulness, and your sense of joy will increase. Friends, I love the fact that Jesus, in speaking about his Father, in speaking about God, mentioned the fact that nothing is unseen by God. Consider the lilies of the field, Jesus said. Not even one sparrow can fall to the ground without your Father knowing about it. In other words, God sees everything. God notices everything, and we can do the same. Joy comes from knowing. Joy comes from thanksgiving. Joy comes from being grateful. Corrie ten Boom and her sister Betsy ended up in Ravensbrück concentration camp because they and their family were caught hiding Jews from the Nazis. And Corrie wrote of her time, or their time. She wrote, "We lay back, struggling against the nausea that swept over us from the reeking straw. Suddenly I sat up, striking my head on the cross slats above. Something had pinched my leg. 'Fleas,' I cried. 'Betsy, the place is swarming with fleas.' 'Year and year,' another one I wailed. 'Betsy, how can we live in this place?'" Show us how. Show us how, Corrie heard from her sister. And then she realized that what was being said was being said in prayer. And then Betsy exclaimed excitedly, "God has given us the answer. In the Bible this morning, read that part again." "It was in 1 Thessalonians," Corrie said. "Here it is. 'Comfort the frightened, help the weak, be patient with everyone. See that none of you repays evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to all.'" "Go on," Betsy said, "that wasn't all. 'Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances.'" "That's it, Corrie," Betsy said. "That's God's answer. Give thanks in all circumstances." And Corrie at first thought her sister had lost her senses, giving thanks to God for an infestation of fleas, but one day realized that the fleas indeed were worth giving thanks for. For Betsy and Corrie held services in their barracks with a Bible that they had smuggled in. And these services were vital for all the women because it gave them a sense of the presence of God, and it also gave them hope. And the reason why the barracks were never searched, the reason why their Bible was never discovered, the reason why they could hold their services of worship was because the guards were too scared of being infested with fleas. So they never searched the barracks. They left the woman alone. But there's more, and I want to end on this note. If we search for instances when Jesus used the word joy, what do we find? Well, it seems there are two occasions when Jesus spoke about joy and one when he actually rejoiced. On one occasion near the time of his death, Jesus prayed for his disciples and asked God to protect them, that they might have his joy made complete in themselves. The other time, it seems, was a little earlier. Jesus said, "If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete." And then Jesus said, "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you." And he added, "No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends." In other words, love is vital in seeking, finding, and understanding joy. It is the bedrock not only of joy, it is the bedrock of life. And in a massively ironic way, what Jesus was saying to his disciples, to his followers, was one finds life in losing one's life for one's friends. For losing one's life in the way that Jesus was going to lose his life was and is the ultimate expression of love. And in that love, joy is found. Now, I realize that our relationships can sometimes be challenging and also trying. But when love, specifically the love of Christ, is the foundation, they can also be the greatest source of joy, encouraging us and nourishing us and blessing us with a sense of direction and purpose, binding us together to experience a fruit of God's Spirit that money cannot buy. And so I hope that all of us may take time to simply put the brakes on and to think about life and to ponder what we have to be grateful for, to look deeper than face value, to take note of even the small things and realize that they are a cause for rejoicing, that there is joy to be found in them. I hope we also take time to think about each other and the relationships that we share, to give thanks for one another, that just as Jesus wanted his disciples to love each other so that his joy would be complete, we would love one another also. I often think about the fact that 11 years ago, I didn't know a single person in this building, in this congregation. I had no idea that any of you even existed. And yet Christ has brought us together and allowed us the opportunity to build relationships. And the overriding feeling, if you like, for me anyway, because I can't speak for you, is one of great joy. And it's a joy that goes deep. Amen.